Welcome. Everyone but me. Damn. That's a bit loud, isn't it? Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulous AmericanFreedomRadio.com platform here. We actually have real AM/FM stations that pick up this show and many others all across America and around the world. And we use the platform to try and give people a little bit of exposure for these very important and interesting ideas and experiences that they've all had. Now, I believe my guest today is Eugene Sonny Irvin. Eugene, welcome to the program. Eugene, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine, Vinny. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. There seems to be a little bit of a delay and problems with your Skype there. We'll chuck you on the phones after this segment is over, if there's still a problem. But anyway, yeah. Would you please divulge just a little bit about yourself and what it is you do?
Sure. my name is Eugene Irvin, and my father's CIA history led to my subsequent involvement in a classified research and development project, namely Project Pegasus, which you guys may be familiar with the work of Andrew Bishago and some others. The current emphasis of my research is on mind control and the effects of that in our society today. And we've uncovered some very disheartening things and stuff that we can overcome together when we have a voice to stand together. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. And, you know, the nature of the project in which I was on as a child and grew up, you know, basically, you know, participating in to varying degrees and involves quantum access technologies and exopolitical relations. And for the layman, that means time travel and aliens. So, you know, that's kind of what the brunt of my stuff is. You know, my father went to seminary to become a priest, and went on to have an extensive intelligence-based military career. And he led the failed Senate campaign for George Bush Sr., the former American president and head of the CIA. That was back in 1970 when that Senate campaign was actually, you know, when he ran for Senate. And my father was also a patent holder on a device which equated to hundreds of millions of dollars on an annual basis, which wouldn't see its way into the pockets of oil company executives and people like George Bush Sr. So there's an obvious conflict of interest there. And, you know, the device is called the Pazer 500. It's an acronym like laser. It's P-A-S-E-R 500. And what it does is basically harness wasted electromagnetic energy from the internal combustion engine and allows it to run more smoothly. It gives a performance increase. But most importantly, it reduces the emissions, sometimes almost nil, and it increases the fuel economy by up to 2/3 in some vehicles and under some conditions. And so, clearly one of the other many, many suppressed technologies, and had it been utilized properly, simply would have resulted in a much cleaner environment for us today. And so, you know, there's a strong environmental aspect to the way that I think and what I do, and I've grown up understanding kind of the crooked ways of the system. My dad was a private pilot for George Bush Sr., okay? So, you know, I've been privy to some things, I think, in my life that a lot of people aren't. And
Like heroin smuggling?
Oh, God, give me a break. You're absolutely right. You know, it's terrible what has been done. And, you know, I'm quite proud of the fact that my father actually led the failed Senate campaign for that mass murderer. You know, I don't endorse it, certainly not the Bush family. You know, it's clear that he played a role in the suppression of this device, which was marketed in 70 countries, et cetera. You know, all kinds of stuff to go along with that. So, you know, of course, these guys bring in the drugs and all this kind of other stuff and torture people, and God knows what they do. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure what to say to that about the heroin question. I guess it was a joke, but you know, you're absolutely right.
There's a reason why his nickname is Poppy Bush.
It's funny. Yeah. You know, go ahead.
I do wonder about this quite often. Is that just how exactly do you get to be an American president without being involved in drug trafficking of some kind? I mean, Clinton was involved in it. George Bush Sr. was involved. I'm sure George W. Bush was involved in drug trafficking, even if it was just his own high cocaine level in his bloodstream as he went into the White House. goodness knows what Obama's done. It's just basically, unless you have something to blackmail you on, you don't get to be president.
Of course, you know, and, you know, it's very well documented that these guys are running the whole show. I mean, let's face it, when you have, you know, satellites that are capable of basically reading the face of a dime from space at any given time, and you can't see, you know, these massive operations going on and all this other. I mean, here in the States, we had Wells Fargo last year gets busted laundering, you know, $330 billion, if I'm not mistaken, for the drug cartels down in, you know, Central America and South America. And, you know, they're fined 1% and nobody goes to jail. I mean, it's just the standard operating procedure. You know, I mean, we've got troops over there, you know, growing poppy right now in Afghanistan, for Christ's sake. So it's corrupt system, clearly. We, you know, we know that, so.
Yeah, I love the bar graphs that come out. You know, it's like heroin production under the Taliban in Afghanistan. Nothing. Heroin production before and after the U.S. invasion. Massive! And under U.S. occupation, it's getting even bigger and bigger and bigger every single year. It's like they've gone from, what, between 1% and 0% of the world's opium and heroin supply to, like, 90%.
Yeah, it's roughly 90% less figure I had heard, so, yeah.
This is how they finance all these black ops and operations like, I would imagine, Project Pegasus.
Absolutely. And what's clear is there was different factions within this Quantum Access program. These, you know, the different really factions of Quantum Access capabilities, you know, were out there. And so, you know, according to some other people that have gone on public record about this thing, there was a Catholic faction within the CIA which, you know, had the access to this. And, of course, we know at the highest rung, you know, Catholicism is basically Luciferianism. I don't know what you know about that, but it's clearly true. And so what I believe is that, you know, it's a clear illustration of the different warring factions in that my dad, who was privy to this technology. In fact, the device that he invented, the patent was awarded in 72, is akin to Tesla technology in many respects, in that just sort of harnesses this wasted electromagnetic energy. And so, you know, what seems to be there is there was a Quantum Access faction that had the capability for Quantum Access that was, you know, going and gathering their own intelligence and trying to basically sabotage the efforts of this Nazi faction, which also had this type of capability, and it's still going on today, clearly. And so, you know, one of the things that I'd like to address today has to do with, you know, Operation Paperclip, the scientists that were brought over here, the eugenics program that's been implemented worldwide. And, you know, we've tackled the GMO. Brilliant work on your part, by that. By the way, I saw you out there with your opera singing and all that. I thought that was great. And it's good to know that people are standing together to come over these things. And you know, I would say that mind control is dismissed due to its effectiveness. You know, I tagged you in some videos today on Facebook. And for anybody out there, I'd encourage you to look at some of these videos, which, you know, show physical examples of mind control. And, you know, we live in America today in a weaponized communications grid. You know, in 1996, there was a series of different criteria that was mandated to major telecom companies, all of which, you know, was unconstitutional. It's basically, you know, the back door into the phones where they can triangulate your past and current position. Your web cache can be accessed, all these different things. And, you know, the criteria was mandated in 1996, and the deadline is October of 2001, okay, right after September 11th, which is, you know, a clear telltale sign that they knew this stuff was coming. They knew they could get away with it. And, you know, it's so terrible what they can do now with the different electromagnetic energy and the terror. You know, it's up to terahertz now. And we live in a country here where there's devices known to the World Health Organization in which, you know, people will crawl up into these things to service them with lead suits on to shield them from the radiation. Okay. They're putting these things on the, you know, the public school property in some cases, right out in the open, literally on the playground itself, okay? These things are clearly not to be in the proximity of any of us, and certainly not children. And so we really have to understand why this is going on, why this issue hasn't been addressed, and the severity of the mind control state worldwide is terrible. I mean, we know the fundamental form of mind control would be the flow, you know, the control of the flow of information, you know, via the media and all these other things. And it's nice to see the mainstream media basically going to hell in a handbasket. and all these other people stepping up and taking control of the media. And we are the media now. And so anybody who's trying to do that, I commend them for that. But, you know, this is a major issue. I mean, we have devices known to the World Health Organization on public school property across this country. And, you know, we need to address this issue. I mean, when's the last time you heard a loving parent say, oh, sure, hey, kiddo, go ahead and go play underneath the highly, electromagnetic device for a recess. Go ahead and just go run and play on it. I mean, you're not supposed to tell them to go play in traffic. It's terrible. And so
I did a caption for that. There was this massive cell phone repeater in the middle of a playground, and the caption was Jungle Gym design in the USA goes downhill.
Clearly. And so, you know, the public isn't quite ready to really wrap their minds around what these devices are capable of doing, I don't think. I mean, you know, that is something that, and I don't want to, you know, be condescending when I say that. I mean, you know, a lot of people still can't understand that there's a massive geoengineering program that's been going on in front of their face, and it's a state of objective from the military itself. And they can't even wrap their mind around that. But the bottom line is, if they cause health hazards, they don't need to be there. And, you know, why it hasn't been addressed further is something that is a major issue. It's hard to know where to really begin with this thing. And what's more is there's been a lot of attempts to cover up this type of information. And, you know, I wouldn't know where to begin with the whole situation with, you know, the exopolitical situation. And I don't want to overstep my boundaries on your show or be disrespectful to anybody who's here to defend themselves.
First of all, there really ain't no boundaries on this show outside of the FCC regulations, which means we can't swear. You can talk about anything you want.
I've got a message for the FCC right now, buddy, and that's why in the hell are these towers on playgrounds with your consent? And, you know, I haven't made it any secret about it at all. You know, I'll tag the Federal Communications Commission and American Tower on my Facebook page with one of the most reputable class action attorneys in the world. Okay, at the same time. So everybody's aware about this, and I haven't made any secret. I don't make any bones about it, and I'm not afraid of it, you know. And so, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not here to defame anybody. I don't want to make personal attacks on anyone. And so I don't want to switch subjects too quickly. I know we only have an hour, and I can eat an hour up quickly as you can.
Technically my second hour guest might not be showing up today, so you could possibly have two.
Well, I'd love to have to, and I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, what is it? What do you feel that the audience needs to know about this stuff? And I mean, you know, are we going to cover this Bishago situation and all of that other stuff?
Oh, sure. I mean, my perspective on the Bishago situation, everybody says, oh, no, he's a liar, he's a fraud, and anything else. And my perspective is when they ask for evidence, don't you realize that when you're in court, testimony is evidence? Okay.
Well, absolutely.
And not only is he got vast quantities of it, he's also got many other people who are in the program who, since him coming out and coming public with this, have come out and basically backed up his story. How much more evidence do you need?
That's right. And look, I'm not here to defame him. Okay. And I, you know, he's had some problems, and clearly mind control was a factor in his case, okay, by his own account. And so my personal contention is that Andy hasn't come out of some of those things yet. You know, we did a radio interview together in which I had called him to a debate, okay, because if there's one thing I remember about my dad when I was a kid, it's that you can't forget that you were on Project Pegasus. He would make me repeat it to him over and over and over, Vinny, okay? And, you know, I mean, the corroboration between my father and Andy's father in that situation, I mean, there's so many similarities. It's such strong, corroborative, circumstantial evidence that anybody could take a look at it and see that, you know, we would either have to be complete, total, both of us, you know, schizophrenic maniacs, or we would have had to have been involved in some type of black government project for this circumstantial evidence to be coincidence. And furthermore, I've provided physical evidence, you know, and much of it in the form of video, timestamps, and text, which is very powerful when it comes to the end of this thing. And so, you know, I do an interview with Andy, in which he endorses my research publicly. He apologized to me profusely. And then a couple of days later, he calls the host, Mike Vera, on Late Night in the Midlands, and says, you know, he asked him to remove this show, which is a clear attempt to withhold information. And it seemed to be the catalyst in which he wanted to do that is a very weird twist of events here that just, you know, I really need to help trying to uncover this from the public, because this is another clear attempt to withhold information. You know, I released, you know, I tried to get a hold of Andy first, being that he's the founder of the Mars Anomaly Research Society, which, you know, some of the stuff that they put up is very credible, and they found a lot of stuff. And you've got other people in the group who may be imaginative or whatever. But if one of those pictures is real, then we've identified a human presence on Mars, an Egyptian presence on Mars, etc. And so I really, you know, I try to get a hold of Andy to release the coordinates to the lakes of liquid water. At least there was lakes there at one time, which in and of itself is a major find, a major scientific discovery. And it seems to be that the water is there now. Okay, I tagged you in the pictures of the coordinates themselves, and anybody can go look at that stuff on Google Mars. Is that a break? We'll pick up there then.
Indeed, you do. Eugene Irvin is my guest, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Just bear in mind, this is an entirely listener-supported show, so if you're capable of going to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, clicking the subscribe button for a couple of dollars a month, it'd be much appreciated because we're having a bit of trouble paying the rent right now. We'll be right back.
Accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. No taboo topics, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important in this day and age that you aren't afraid to go where others fear to tread. And there's a great quote here from Mark Twain. What does he say there? He says, "It is easier to fool someone." Well, let me turn around the right way. "It is easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled." Isn't that interesting? I love Mark Twain quotes. It's like if you could pick one person throughout history who's a real cynical bastard but seems to get it right most of the time about the human condition and the scumbaggery that afflicts it, Mark Twain. And my very special guest is Eugene Irvin, the living chrononaut. So welcome back, mate. And there's certain information that you've disclosed on other radio shows before, which you said Andy Bishago actually called up the host and said, you know, take it off.
Absolutely. And that whole, you know, it really brings home and illustrates all the points that were made in that interview for anybody who's really paying attention to it. You know, mind control was the basic nature of this program. And, you know, the default psychological programming in the public is a massive thing to contend with. But furthermore, on an individual basis, particularly if we've been in these types of projects, it's very clear that the mind control is there. And one of the things that they'll do is try to keep participants from ever communicating or having any contact with people. And so what I feel personally is that he defaulted to that in an attempt to get this thing off the air, because of that default psychological programming. And so, you know, the basic nature of that was, again, these towers, which is a major issue. I mean, I can't state it enough how mind control is dismissed due to its effectiveness. I don't say that because I think it sounds good. Okay. It's every moment of my waking reality out here, and it's terrible. I mean, what we really have uncovered is they're using the free will of the human organism after seeding it with negative, you know, ideas and feelings in order to bring about a negative manifestation, because there are entities that feed on this stuff clearly. Okay. And so, you know, whatever resonates with somebody, you can call it Lucifer and his angels or demons. You could call it Jinn. You could call it negative energy. You could call it, you know, the yang to the yang, or whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is it's a very clear factor in our world today, and this, you know, the dualistic nature of our reality. And so it's not okay to do this. And what it is, it's a refined Montauk type of technology, which we see being used with school children across the country. And, you know, as far down, I've confirmed independently, as far south as Guatemala, this system is in place and intact. And so,
and by the way, people, Montauk is not a form of Jamaican communication.
You know, for those who aren't familiar with the Montauk Project, you know, the individual who helped really, you know, develop some of the technology and back engineer some of the stuff is a gentleman named Preston Nichols. And to put it in his words, it's a mind amplifier. And, it, you know, it's a two-way street. There's many different ways in which they can do this. But, you know, we're materializing matter through our perception of heavier elements. And what that means is that, we, you know, things are not in a solid state until they're observed by a being. You know, this has been, you know, this is basically the gist of relativity, part of it. And, you know, that's only good up to 3D. I mean, you know, we have CERN reaffirming their findings that, you know, they've made particles go faster than the speed of light. At that point, you really have to bring in a quantum, you know, model of things, and even more into a plasma model of things, which would be the kind of the next dimension of this stuff. And, you know, the bottom line is, in Montauk, what they would do is they would broadcast out people's consciousness that was amplified via electromagnetic energy, and they would broadcast it out after seeding it with negative, you know, ideas and feelings, and literally create with it. And so, and they did this with the same type of technology that you will find in these towers out here today. And, you know, I feel like that's probably, you know, if people don't believe that or not, and that sounds discrediting to any of the further information, you know, just take it at the first level that these devices are known to cause serious health hazards, and they're on, you know, children will go and line up underneath these things at recess. Okay, they're in very close proximity to these things, and so it's a very negative thing. And so we really have to wake up to this thing. It's, you know, GMO, chemtrails, all these things, where we're dealing with a multi-arrayed system of eugenics and mind control, which is ultimately time control. Time is relative to the perspective of the observer. So when our collective perceptions and are seeded with this type of negativity, it has a profound impact on the physical environment in which we are living in today. And so who wants to do something like that is something that, you know, it's made me furious in my life, you know, and you really have to just get to the place where, you know, trying to transfigure your anger into a righteous work by having a voice and getting out there and actually doing something about it. And so, you know, I think we basically left off on the Mars thing. Not to jump around here, but, you know, if there's lakes of liquid water on Mars, that's a huge finding. If NASA's own photographs are proving that, the public has a right to know that, you know, their tax dollars have been paying for this. Or maybe it was the opium money in freaking, you know, Afghanistan. But bottom line,
what's your your tax dollars paid to send the troops over to plant and guard the opium?
What's that? I'm sorry, Randy. What was that? What's my take on it?
See, no. If our tax dollars didn't pay for the NASA program, if it was the opium and everything like that, then it's certainly your tax dollars that are paying all the American troops and CIA operatives that are going over to Afghanistan and planting and guarding and processing the poppy fields anyway.
Exactly. I mean, in one way or another, you know, every dollar, with the dollar being the world currency, has been lent at interest, which perpetuates a cycle of debt that's impossible to get out of mathematically for 100 years this year, since 1913. You know, we've all heard about the Federal Reserve. If you haven't, you know, look it up. The last person who tried to put a U.S. Treasury note into circulation had his head blown off in the city in which I'm in right now, and that was John F. Kennedy. Okay, and so, you know, there's not even anything to back up the money there anyway, is my point. So it doesn't matter if it was tax dollars or opium money or, you know, the child sex slave trade that's going on out there's money. You know, it's all just, you know, it's all a fabrication. So,
yeah, there's just one big gargantuan conspiracy concocted through the means of scumbaggery. And essentially, most people only figure out one branch of this tree, when the reality is there are many branches and deep, deep roots that are even bigger than the branches that you can see.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's been, you know, this is the culmination of, you know, millennia of these people implementing their tactics, and we're dealing with that today. And so, you know, it's difficult to try to come up with ways to overcome this stuff, but clearly boycotting these things, you know, raising awareness about these things. I mean, you know, I'll try to educate mothers about the fact that, you know, fluoride, you know, in a recent Harvard study, I think July of last year, you know, they reaffirm what we've known for decades, the fluoride inhibits neurological development in children and human beings. I mean, it lowers IQ points by the tens of points. You know, and I can go to the store today, Vinny, and look at a gallon of water with, a picture of a baby on it. And on the label there, it'll say with added fluoride, add to formula, et cetera, and all these things. And so it's just sickening to think that, you know, we live in a place where people are intentionally soft killing us for their own, you know, why would they want to do that is something that is, you know, hard to wrap our minds around. And we can't put our own ways of thinking out there when we try to take this into the right context, because these people clearly don't have empathy and they're murderous and they're devils. You know, all, you know, the Jews sat there and waited for a knock on their door and you know, close to, you know, over 6 million of them actually were killed in horrific deaths in concentration camps due to that. And so, you know, I'm not about sitting there and waiting for a knock on the door. And in any way to get this type of information out is an important tool for the people out there. So,
well, everybody knows about the general scheme of things. Yeah, we're fracked. But in terms of your very specific personal experiences, let's say in Project Pegasus, I mean, could you just tell us a wee story about how you got into it and what it was like being in there? You know, describe the jump ropes and whatever.
Sure. You know, my first memory is of, you know, sitting, actually coming out of a Montauk chair in an underground location. Presumably it had concrete walls. There was, you know, lab coats in there with pocket protectors. And I was crying my eyes out at age 3, you know, and trying to really figure out why the words time travel were in one of my first memories as a child has always been something that haunted me. And, you know, clearly my dad's involvement with these, you know, with the nature of his patent, his CIA history, et cetera, and the Catholic, the Catholic aspect to his CIA involvement, clearly all play a role into this thing. That was my link into these things, you know. And I grew up, you know, not really, you know, you're trained not to remember these things, and it's so effective. It's amazing what you can do, but there's a stimulus there and people to where, you know, you'll go and basically execute an op after receiving that stimulus. And there's a variety of different ways in which they could do that. It could be an inaudible transmission from satellite or phone or through the radio in your car. Okay. The technology is that sophisticated. And, you know, I'm actually in an area right now where one of these operations that I was involved in, where I participated in it, and that's actually, I'm in Addison, Texas, which is just north of Dallas, a little suburb here, and there was a National Continuity of Communications exercise in March of 2011 in which, you know, the major telecom companies were working with FEMA, and it was basically a martial law communications network is what some people have called this, and it was installed in its entirety by March 7th of 2011, okay? And nobody was covering the story. I mean, nobody was covering the story. And, you know, there was a huge, you know, there was like 25 to 30, you know, tractor trailers full of communications equipment in a vacant parking lot here. And this is basically a contingency plan. This is for continuity of communications in the event of a disaster. And so I find myself on top. I don't even know why I'm doing this. Why am I covering this story? And, you know, it's one of these ops that you're basically doing. And the thing is the contingency planning for future events based on the foreknowledge of them is one of the prime directives of Pegasus. You know, that's per Andy Bishago. And certainly I can, affirm that fact here today. And so the bottom line is the Fukushima incident was 2 days later. You know, we have the huge earthquake, the subsequent tsunami and Fukushima disaster, and we haven't even begun to come to terms with the ramifications of what that's done today. I mean, this thing, you know, radiation levels were raised across the world for human consumption directly after this event. You know, we saw, you know, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory releases the satellite imagery of all this stuff washing up on the west coast of the United States. And this is a major deal. We're seeing butterflies and livestock and all these other things with mutations over there today. And, you know, this stuff kills people. This is a major, you know, nuclear disaster, which is still happening at this very moment. And, you know, is it a coincidence that there's a National Continuity of Communications exercise in America across this country in conjunction with FEMA 2 days prior to this incident is just a no-brainer. I mean, of course it's not. And so it's run-of-the-mill for us to see the execution of an operation under the guise of an exercise, you know? And so, you know, 9/11, London train bombings, Boston, there's million, you know, there's tons of examples of this. And so from my perspective, this is a form of contingency planning for future events. Okay, that's the nature at the bottom of this conspiracy. You know, we Pegasus is an intelligence gathering operation via quantum access technology. And what we found out is if you change things, you know, say that we stopped 9/11 from happening, okay, for example, all the intelligence that was gathered there via quantum access is nullified due to the fact that the timeline itself changes because the series of events that happened afterwards aren't the same. You know, it's pretty simple. The butterfly effect basically doesn't occur. And so, you know, to contingency plan for these events and to help coax them along in a, you know, a fashion in which we're able to deal with them seems to not negate the intelligence, seems to be able to put us, you know, there's innumerable potentialities of different scenarios that were basically happening all around us at any time that our collective and individual perceptions allow us to enter into, you know, to be able to get into and interface. There are so many different timelines around us that, you know, it's just the very nature of time itself and what our reality is. You know, there's many mansions in my father's house, and I will go and prepare a way before you is a red lettered example of that from a Christian perspective or a follower of Jesus. You know, that's for me, that's a clear interdimensional reference in scripture to put out there for people. And so there's a lot of people, I think, that have a hard time wrapping their minds around this, and that's unfortunate. But, I mean, doesn't it really only make sense that, you know, time travel and these different types of quantum access capability would have arisen and emerged and been weaponized? I mean, you know, Andy makes a brilliant case about that in his testimony with the people on the Manhattan Project and Los Alamos and all these different nuclear physicists and how, you know, teleportation, all these other things were weaponized at that time. And so, you know, you don't want to be able to make this stuff available to everybody, and it makes sense for it to be weaponized to some degree, of course, you know. But, you know, declassifying teleportation, for example, could be a very viable thing for our environment to make a recovery.
Yeah, and I don't know about everybody else, but when you sit in a plane for a really, 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 really long time, like 10 hours or something, you think to yourself, you know, why couldn't we just have a teleport instead of an airport? That'd be really convenient. And it'd actually make all the goods and everything go everywhere quite a lot faster and easier and cheaper and good for the economy, wouldn't it? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And for those of you who watch the webcam versions on my YouTube channel, Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, I was holding up a picture earlier of the Fukushima radiation leak. It covers the entire fracking Pacific Ocean in red. Okay? The whole ocean. According to the Bible, about a third of the fish will die in the end times. I mean, all you got to do is just nuke at one power plant, and then suddenly it's biblical frickin' apocalypse time, isn't it? That's how scary and serious this is. It's terrifying. And I think that was the one thing that really kind of woke me up, like jolt out of bed, like, oh my God, we're all fracked. Now I need to become a radio show host and expose scumbaggery. So fear's a good motivation as well. Now, we're trying to get Eugene back on the phone. Eugene, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Skype there.
Yeah, we had a bit of problems there straight from the beginning, so that's why I made sure to have your phone numbers and everything all ready, so here we go. So back to Project Pegasus and your involvement with it. Do you recall where you left off?
Yeah, I was in the middle of this continuity of communications exercise. You know, I found myself, you know, interviewing a lady on top of a building that was adjacent to this parking lot that was full of all this communications equipment, and asking her, you know, what they're doing for FEMA. She's up there installing, you know, communications equipment on top of this building. And she says, we're doing an exercise for, quote, a 9/11-style event. Okay, you know, it'll make you the hair stand up on the back of my neck even thinking about it. You know, when I think about FEMA and all of the different things that go off with this, it was just, you know, it was a pretty terrifying experience. And switching timelines will do something to you. You know, it's a weird deal to be able to come into an alternate timeline or even be on the same timeline from which you came at a different point in it. And so, you know, there's been many examples of that in my life. A lot of them I've actually documented on my Facebook page. You know, I've done that pretty thoroughly, actually. I have literally called air cover in, okay, on my Facebook page and documented it coming in with video and posted a corresponding video on my Facebook page, Benny, okay? I mean, for people who think that's outlandish, I can prove it. So, you know, that's not something that you hear every day. And so, you know, it's a weird ballgame out here. You know, the nature of time, the nature of our reality is something that a lot of us don't understand. And the construct of what we, you know, live in is what I would choose to kind of call the template. I don't know if you're familiar with the holographic theory, but basically it was proposed by these two physicists, Braun and I forget the other guy's name. It starts with a P. I always want to say Prim, but I'm not sure what it is. But the bottom line is you can think of the template as kind of the fundamental things that we adhere to in the physical, regardless of our acknowledgement of them or not, kind of like a curve when you're driving down the road, or, you know, the concrete that you're walking on top of, or any of those things. And so that would be the template that we're in. And, you know, it is not relative to our perception. Actually, that's not true. I don't want to confuse people. It's more permeable than what we're led to believe, most certainly, things in the physical. However, it's largely not relative to our perception, and those would be the fundamental things that we do adhere to regardless of our acknowledgement or not from my perspective. You know, you can call that truth if you want to, and I guess, you know, trying to really ascertain what that is what this whole life is supposed to be about, at least for it is, you know, just for me personally. But the rest of our waking reality is largely relative to our perception, and it's so permeable. And the manifestive nature of the human organism is so profound that we have a hard time understanding just how potent it is because we're doing it from a subconscious perspective, you know? And so that fact in and of itself really makes it hard to get past the fact that we're doing it. Being, you know, we all know that we don't, you know, we use a very minimal fraction of our cognitive ability and of our brains. And so, you know, that pretty much, you know, put you there where you're doing all this stuff from a subconscious perspective. And again, we're materializing matter through our perception of heavier elements. And so, you know, everything that we've ever really perceived has not happened outside of us, okay? It's happened inside of the brain through a series of different nerve impulses that are being interpreted. You know, if it's visual, the light comes in through the eye, and then it's interpreted in the brain in the speed of light, you know, naturally in the speed of light. One way in which the human organism can change timelines and alter the perception of time and have time dilation is by being able to step out of that, you know, to change things in the perception faster or slower than the speed of light. That in and of itself is a form of rudimentary time travel. You know, it's not walking through a teleporter or a stargate, but it is a way in which wavelengths are interpreted in a different way in the brain that dilates the time that we're perceiving. And so when we do this collectively, it can have a very profound effect on the timeline in which we're in. And it's very important for us to understand that. And so, you know, mind control equals time control in the rawest sense. And so, you know, when we're being seated with this negativity in our collective subconscious, which is, you know, manifesting our reality to a very large degree around us, it really has profound implications on the physical environments in which we live. And so there's so much more that we're capable of doing, is my point. We really need to be able to understand this. And certainly, you know, I'm not ashamed of the name of Jesus Christ, and I'm not going to sit here and preach to people. I know the church is something that clearly has its problems, and it is one of the fundamental flaws of humankind, okay? But with that said, the word church in Greek means the called out, or the called out ones in some context. And, you know, it seems a blasphemous thing for a lot of us to consider that there will be men on this earth who will do even greater works than Jesus did himself. However, it's clearly written in red letters, which means it came out of his own mouth in John 14:12. And so if we can take that into the proper context, we're talking about, you know, psychic ability. We're talking about manifestation, transmutation. And if those are bad words, if alchemy is a bad word and your vocabulary because of some connotation that you have on it due to an indoctrinated bias, I would encourage whoever you might be to think of things in a different context, because transmutation and an alchemical, you know, manifestation of things is exactly what occurred when water was turned into wine in Scripture, okay? And so those abilities are inherent in the human organism and clearly suppressed and actually used for means in which we don't even understand what we're doing with them. And so that's a major issue. You know, we have people that basically assaulting the psychic energy systems, the chakra systems, the creative centers of the human organism today in this country and across this world on a variety of different levels. Just seeding the mind with negative things via media and all these other things is a terrible thing to do. And when you begin to affect the resonant centers of the human organism, which, you know, the chakra system is a very tangible thing that is a part of the human organism, and chakras all resonate specific frequencies, and they have specific functions. And these are the manifestive psychic centers of the body. And, you know, when we're being assaulted, and the free will of the human organism is being assaulted by the abuse of psychotronic devices, electromagnetic energy, the eugenics program in the food, in the media, with the control of this information, all these other things, it is a miracle. It is a miracle right now that the human organism can even begin to function with the assault that we have been under. And so, you know, I believe that the second coming of Jesus comes back for his body, and that would be every single person out there who is able to, you know, facilitate love with an open heart into their waking moment in the physical reality. And so, you know, these are the things that I've learned on some freaking, you know, black bop government project that basically, you know, am I a rogue? I don't know if I'm rogue or not. You know, I don't know if I'm supposed to be sitting here telling this or what I've overcome or any of it. I just simply know that this is the truth that I have to stand in today and try to bring it to people and hope that something gets done. And I would like to see people really get behind this effort to say, what in the hell are these things doing on playgrounds, these devices? I mean, regardless of if they help manifest or whatever, that doesn't matter, okay? These things cause health hazards, cancer, cognitive disruption, et cetera. These things are weaponized to the sense that, you know, we use them in Iraq. Why do you think all those people came out and basically were, you know, surrendering? It's these psychotronic devices that are able to, you know, use inaudible transmission and other methodologies in order to make people succumb to these devices and the energy and the thoughts that they are basically putting into our head. You know, synthetic telepathy is one of these types of technologies that is real. Okay, I'd refer anybody to, you know, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, it's true. I mean, the brain has a particular frequency, like a certain number of hertz that it communicates between the cells in your brain and stuff like that. And so what they figured out is that if you put a broadcast signal directed at somebody's brain using that same frequency, they can hear your thoughts inside their head.
That's exactly right. And, you know, the human skeletal system acts like an antenna in that fashion. And, you know, what you're talking about is the human resonance.
That's what your DNA is. The DNA strand is a double helix. It's a perfect antenna.
That's right. It's also a form of resonant frequency expenditure in a vast medium in which, you know, we can store information on. And, you know, these devices...
Hold on, Eugene. We're coming to break right now. We'll be back in just a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, with the second hour with Eugene. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Alert the masses. Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Not only is it fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which, according to the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, it's good for the economy because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. And my very special guest is, I've forgotten your name already, Eugene Sonny Irvin, is it?
That's it, if any. You can call me Sonny, all my friends do. And, you know, my name is, you know, technically Eugene Irvin III, and Sonny was a nickname of my father that just kind of stuck, so.
All right, so it's not because of your sunny disposition?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Benny. What'd you say?
So it's not because of your sunny disposition?
You know, it could be. It depends on when you catch me, you know. I mean, you know, I've had to deal with quite a bit of anger in my life, to be real honest with you, due to the fact that things like this are covered up, and I've had to, you know, see it from such a keen perspective growing up. You know, I mean, you know, these guys basically killed my freaking dad when I was a kid, suppressed the technology that could have made the air that we're breathing cleaner today, you know. And so, you know, I personally released a rough schematic of a perpetual energy system that's based on the magnetic principle and a propulsion system for craft on my Facebook page, okay? And so, you know, it's really easy how it works, too. And, you know, to see, you know, obviously our infrastructure is built upon fossil fuel, and there has to be ways of implementing new types of technology when it comes to energy to not have to, you know, completely have a huge falling out in terms of our economy to sustain ourselves here. But the bottom line is every time we're pressing our foot on the gas pedal, we're making some evil guy richer, and we're furthering the tragedy environmentally in which we find ourselves in today. And so it's a major issue. You know, things are going to have to change here. There's more than enough resources on this earth to sustain ourselves. You know, I saw one of your guests the other night with the probiotic oil theory. You know, oil is infinite is what I saw the headline. I didn't really get a chance to check out that interview. But, you know, it very may well be. But regardless, you know, it's not necessary is the point. You know, cold fusion and all these other things are ridiculous. You know, you harnessing the power of gravity is ultimately what I feel is where we really need to go in terms of energy sources in the future. And, you know, it's pretty simple to generate an electric current by harnessing the power of gravity. And for your listeners, anybody who would like to try this, I'd encourage you to just go build it and go tell, you know, petition to your government or whoever else it is out there to go ahead and start using it. Because it's really, here's how simple it is. It might sound a little funny, but, it, you know, it beats the hell out of a coal power plant that's polluting the hell out of our environment or some nuclear power plant that's basically, you know, a ticking time bomb. You know, excuse the pun, but... You know, we've all seen a pendulum in which, you know, you have the balls, you have the perpetual motion. You drop one, it comes down, it hits, and the other one goes back up, and it comes back down, and it keeps going until it finally runs out. All you need to generate an electric current out of that simple pendulum, imagine, you know, 8 10,000-pound balls lined up with these cables on a big, you know, apparatus that allows them to swing, a huge pendulum, if you will. And you put, you know, think of it as a pole that goes down through the center of that, in the center ball, which is able to capture that energy that turns, okay? You put a gear on a horizontal turbine, which generates electric current when it spins, that, you know, regardless of the way that the ball hits, it's going to turn that with the proper gear, okay? Go ahead and put a solar-powered hydraulic lift on the on one end of the ball to pull the other ball back up, every time it basically runs out of energy. And that's it. It's that
so
simple.
So is it in some way, you know those things that successful business people have on their desk? You know, they've got like this little string of balls, and you pull one ball off to the side, and then you let it go,
yeah.
And then one ball on the other side, and it just kind of perpetually keeps going like that.
Right. I mean, you have the variable of resistance to turn the turbine there. It doesn't matter if you can pick up those balls and let them keep falling down in a timely fashion to keep generating that current and store that current. When you're running AC, it doesn't make any real difference. That's free energy. You know, that's not the one that I initially released. Come to find out, you know, there's a nuclear engineer named Cecchi, you know, developing the technology afterwards, you know, and, you know, I put it out there for free, you know, and that's basically, you know, what do you get? Look, you know, you have a circular magnet on a flywheel, okay, of a North Pole, and you have, you know, a stationary magnet offset to the crucial angle, which is also a North Pole, okay, what's going to happen there? It's going to turn the other magnet that's on the flywheel, puts it on a turbine. What do you get? You get electrical current for free that never stops. It's so simple, the good things in life. That one simple concept in and of itself can completely revamp the entire infrastructure upon which we have built basically a grave for ourselves on this planet. Isn't it ironic that the blood of the earth, you know, oil, is killing us every day? Wars are fought. People and children are suffering and dying. Terrible deaths because of it. And, you know, proof positive that greed is the root of all evil. Give me a freaking break. And so, you know, my dad's own technology could be incorporated into this stuff. It's very technical, and I don't have time to get into it, and I don't fully understand it, to be completely honest with you. But you could add this to an existing turbine. It's not the source in which the Pager 500 basically has, you know, a catchment system for electromagnetic energy that is generated off of the distributor cap wires in an internal combustion engine, okay? It harnesses that energy and allows it to run back into it, and it increases the performance, reduces the emissions, blah, blah, blah. If you were to add that one simple concept to existing, you know, hydroelectric power, for example, you would have a huge performance increase in it. I mean, it's such a simple concept, and all of the energy that we need is out there in the air around us. It doesn't even have to be radiant energy. It doesn't matter if we don't know how gravity really works. We could just capture that free energy, that gravity right there, and generate electric current for it.
What the problem is with that is one person can't control it all.
Well, exactly. You know, and it's a very relatively small group of people who are controlling it all today, and their bloodlines that go back for ages. And when are we going to stand up and say, you know what, we're not taking it anymore, we're on to your freaking game, and we're not having it. We know you're poisonous. We know you're leading us to a slaughter.
I think that we're already doing that.
We are.
What people are waiting for, and I find this ironic. Why the frack are they waiting for critical mass? You know? Why not become a part of it? Why not just say, well, frack it, if I take personal responsibility for one tiny little issue, and that's all you can do, really. I mean, think about all the different concepts and all the different things that are a problem, you know, free energy, this, that, and the other, the oil companies, the vaccines, blah, 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 blah. It's too much for one person to let alone get your head around every single part of the conspiracy, but you certainly can't solve all of those problems either. You can focus on one particular thing, just one thing. That will be your contribution to the betterment of humanity. And that's all you have to do is take responsibility for something, not everything. Because if you try to take responsibility for everything, it means you try to take responsibility for everybody. And that means nobody's got any personal responsibility, and you and any society that comes out from after you solving all of its problems will just be a bunch of morons. Who won't appreciate or be grateful for anything that happened to them because they never earned any of their freedoms. And I think that's the reason why we're in this society right now. It's because people have abdicated all their personal responsibility, and they think that in order to solve any problem, oh, I have to solve all of them, so they decide to solve none of them. And that's why we're enslaved.
Yeah, that's very true, Benny. Well said. You know, it does seem overwhelming sometimes. And to take responsibility for that one thing is a great place for anybody to start today. You know, I think that You know, obviously, when it comes to mind control, for example, I'm a firm believer that when we can illustrate physical examples of this stuff, that people are going to have to start waking up. And when we're getting an outcry from the public now with these towers on the school property, I mean, you know, when people are messing with your kids, you know, we have a tendency to get pissed off about that as a civilization and as a people. And that's why I focus on it so much, because, you know, clearly these devices are affecting everyone and in ways in which we're not even sure how, you know. And so the bottom line, and what I found and uncovered in any of my research, is this. Anything with the wavelength has a property of manifestation, and understanding the way that they, understanding the correlative effect that these wavelengths have with one another is a relatively, you know, unexplored science by the public in general, but something that has certainly been refined and is well known to these perpetrators of this type of agenda out there who are clearly trying to kill us and all these other things, you know. And, you know, it's disgusting to think about, you know, children are suffering, having their IQ. I mean, why in the hell? Just the fluoride issue. You know, we're starting to finally see an uproar about that. You know, Toronto's had it removed. I was surprised I had it down there in New Zealand. I had no idea about that until I started tuning in. You know, this is something that clearly makes people stupid. I mean, it's not there for any other reason. It's not effective as a you know, a cavity preventative when it's ingested into the human body. I mean, this is basically the byproduct of radioactive waste. And so, you know, it's just terrible what's going on over there. And what we're going to – so here's the thing. Okay, a good example is this. You know, the CDC has the audacity to put, quote, you know, a humorous feature on their website for a zombie apocalypse preparedness kit, okay? And they think it's funny. And on that same website, you could go see the statistical numbers generated, again, from the CDC. This is on their own website, that to allot 20 years before every child in the United States of America would have autism is a very generous time to allot before that would actually take place, okay? And I say that because 1 in 25,000 children roughly 30 years ago was diagnosed with autism in this country by age 8. The ways in which we've been able to diagnose this illness, which is terrible and debilitating, have you know, grown by leaps and bounds, and we're able to identify it better now. But even when you equate that variable into it, to say now conservatively by the CDC's own numbers that there's 1 in 88 children born in this country with autism or diagnosed with it by age 8, just do the math. You know, 30 years ago, 25,000, now it's 1 in 88. Some numbers would say 1 in 50. Give me a break. 20 years.
I don't give a frack what your statistical analysis is. There's no possibility that you could have just all of a sudden detected that many more cases. I mean, what's that, a 1,000,000% increase or some Shiite Muslim?
Oh, it's ridiculously astronomical. It's so, you know, there has to have been,
One second. 1 in 20, what'd you say, 1 in 25,000?
Yeah, 30 years ago. And so, you know, conservatively, the last figure that I looked up was 1 in 88 by age 8, okay? You know, pediatricians were, you know, fascinated.
By 88 equals 284. So that's a 284,000% increase.
People wake up to that number, okay? But here's the good news. I mean, can you imagine? Okay, there has to be something going on here. You know, pediatricians were basically fascinated by the fact of a pediatric case of cancer all the way back into the 50s, because there wasn't any prior to that that were documented. Okay, today, in this country, we've got freaking, you know, hospitals devoted to child cancer, making all this money on every corner in our urban center. Okay?
And so it's terrible. And incidentally, a bunch of those hospitals are actually funded by Freemasons, and there's also they get mired in allegations of corruption and child trafficking at the same time. So they're preying on their children. Oh, my God.
Right. Exactly. So this is the enemy that we're talking about here, and I cannot stress the importance of praying for our enemies enough, and I know it's the most difficult thing to do. I can assure you it changes the physical environment, which And that's where I'm leading to with this, because, you know, it's not a message of fear-mongering that I'm coming with here today. It's one of hope, because the reason that we're being assaulted with all of this stuff is because there has been energetic changes that are going on in our solar system throughout our galaxy. These people were well aware of this fact, and it increases our manifested quality. And, you know, if there was ever, you know, look, there are hundreds of thousands of, you know, very well-documented case studies in clinical trials of placebo groups having complete alleviation of their symptoms by taking nothing more than a sugar pill. The stimulus, you know, the catalyst of belief having an effect on the body is clearly illustrated in these trials, okay? Meanwhile, we have those new diseases coming out every 5 minutes, restless leg syndrome, and God knows what else crap they're feeding us out there. And it's all about this money, control, and, you know, it's ridiculous. And so we have the ability to overcome these things, and that's why we're under such an assault right now, because those, you know, the second coming of Christ is happening through the body of Christ right now, and we're not seeing that reflection increase to the rate in which it was. I'm seeing healthy babies being born all the time. I pray for them every day, and I would encourage everybody else to do that. And at the same time, remember, faith without works is dead. You know, we can sit here and believe all these things and hope things, and that does have an effect on the environment. But to be able to get out there and still do things in the physical is where we're at right now, and trying to kind of straddle one leg into 3D and another into up to 5D is what we need to do. And so, you know, what I'm getting at is we're not seeing that statistical fulfillment happen with this going on right now. There's, you know, and that's the biggest news out there as far as I'm concerned, because it's a testament to the triumph of the human spirit over the physical reality in which we're in. And so these guys want to take over. You know, it doesn't matter what we believe, you know. And for anybody out there in the audience, you know, go look up the work of Albert Pike, who was, you know, one of the foremost, you know, authorities in Freemasonry, okay, who wrote a book called Morgan Dogma in the 1860s, okay? And Freemasonry is intentionally misleading at the lower levels. And if the elders don't think you're going to play ball, you'll never make it past the 32nd degree, okay, which the ceremony about that is all about balance. And balance is a very important thing to have in life. But the bottom line is, it clearly states in Morals and Dogma that Lucifer is the god of Freemasonry. These are my words. These are the words of Albert Pike, who, you know, by the way, and very importantly to mention and note, wrote about how the First and Second World War would take place. He nailed it. Okay, this is back in the 1860s. And, you know, went on to talk about how the Third World War would be, you know, taking place in the future. And I guess we'll pick up there when we come back after the break.
Indeed. Eugene Irvin is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, a.k.a. Sonny, not because of his sunny disposition. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. By the way, last week, I think just after that Monsanto protest where I led the fracker and was doing the operatic thing, my voice was really, really terrible, man. And like that weekend, I was just totally wiped out and virtually wiped out for the whole week afterwards as well. And I was really behind on my archiving and editing and all of this kind of stuff. Yesterday I took the day off. So that I could finish all that archiving and everything and stop feeling like crap. So all of the new archives are up there now, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Right up the top there it says Radio Archives, and you can get all of those there, as well as the commercial-free versions for subscribers. So if you subscribe to me, I'll send you the links to the ad-free archives pages there for as little as $1 a month, ladies and gentlemen. Some people do 20, and some people do more. but as little as a dollar a month, and we'll give you some commercial-free archives. Very, very handy little tool to have there. Saves you a lot of listening time, and also that irritating spot where you're like, oh, I don't want to listen to the ads, so you have to, you know, skip through like six times an episode. Who wants to do that? Why not just have me edit all the ads out for you and give you some money? Now, my very special guest, Eugene Sonny Ehrman. And we were talking over the break, me and the producer Adam, about ecstasy, empathy, and psychopathy, right? And I always wondered, is it possible to make a psychopath feel empathy? And I was thinking, what would a kind of drug induced state would you have to actually impose on these type of people, creatures, whatever you think that they are, in order to actually make them feel the pain that they're doing to other people? And I recall that the original translation, the reason why it was called E, wasn't to mean ecstasy; it was actually to mean empathy. And way back in the day, when it was prescribed by doctors, it was given to violent fathers, and they sent them home to their kids. They never lay a hand on them again. And so naturally, because it was so effective at stopping the family unit breakdown and violence, they made it illegal. So imagine if you actually gave this type of a drug to a psychopath. Could you artificially induce real human empathy and make them see the consequences for their actions for once? I don't know what the answer to that is, but it'd be interesting to find out. Eugene, are you still there?
I am. Well, yeah, I'm sitting there having visions in my head of these guys, you know, dosing too much Molly and sitting there and having a spiritual awakening. That would be brilliant.
Yeah, you can imagine what kind of a conflict it might start up within somebody if they suddenly realize, oh my God, I'm a psychotic piece of crap. What have I done to people?
Yeah, we can only hope, huh?
Yeah, I mean, hey, well, here's a terrorist operation for you. This is theoretically speaking. I remember a scene from L.E.G. In the House, where there was this big UN conference thing going on, and everybody was like getting angry and out of control over this little African country conflict, and Russia and the United States were going at it and stuff like that. And so what LEG does is he spikes their tea with huge quantities of weed, and all of a sudden the conflict is called off and they start dancing. So what if you dose the entire Congress and the Senate and the White House with a decent quantity of ecstasy, you know, what would happen? Would the country suddenly be like, oh my God, we're taxing people for no reason. We're killing innocent babies. Man, what are we doing? Let's stop. Let's stop it all, man. Let's bring the troops home and stuff. Be classic. And of course, they'd have to be really wasted off their nut in order to stop doing what they're doing, wouldn't they? Because this is what they do when they're sober.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, maybe we could see, maybe we could bypass the fulfillment of what we were discussing before the break in that, you know, the Third World War was laid out by this guy, Albert Pike, in 1860, I can't forget, 67 or whatever. That, you know, the plan that they were going to try to execute was to turn the Muslims, the Jews, and the Christians all against one another, have them basically do themselves in, and then usher in their, you know, one world system, which is ultimately at the core Luciferianism. I mean, you know, it's right there in black and white that the god of Freemasonry is Lucifer. So, you know, if you're a lower level Mason and you feel that that's not true, let me tell you something. My dad was a freaking pilot for George Bush Sr., and I think I know what I'm talking about. Okay, go look up Morals and Dogma for yourself and look it up for yourself and just take it for what it is. And so, you know, I think that what my point is that we're clearly seeing that agenda, you know, coming to fruition today all across the globe. And, you know, a house that's divided will not stand. and ultimately forgiveness and compassion and empathy, not only for those that we love and for those that we're at odds with, just in the traditional sense, that's not, you know, these evil, basically technocrats out there running everything today, they need to be extended this type of forgiveness as well, and it's very important. And I know, you know, that's a difficult thing to wrap your mind around, and I don't intend to, in any form or fashion, to sound as a proponent for any of the things that they've, you know, implemented out there with this agenda that they clearly have to soft kill us and lead us to a slaughter. And I don't, you know, it doesn't need to be taken that way. Take me out of context there. But, you know, what do we do with this stuff, guys? I mean, what is the answer? Is what we all, you know, it's raising awareness. It's having action behind our works and educating ourselves and ultimately understanding the power that we have as a human organism. And, you know, something that I would like to note, and something that has to kind of do with another area of my research, which is very important, also has to do with some prophetic things that are written in the book of Revelation and the Bible. And I think that it's very important. It's very interesting, and there seems to be a very strong affirmation that this stuff is real. And how John of Patmos knew this stuff, you know, almost 2,000 years ago is utterly fascinating and something that needs to be reckoned with in anybody's worldview, okay? And to kind of put things in context, I'll start with a device that was the first quantifying data collection system on planet Earth, which was called the Hollerith machine, developed by IBM, ultimately, okay? And there has been many, many attempts to bring IBM in front of a war crimes tribunal for crimes against humanity because of the fact that they solicited this device to the Nazis in 1938, okay? And you may have never heard of it until now, and that's how good they are at sweeping this stuff under the rug. And please listen carefully and do your own research about this, because this is a historical fact in the world in which you live, and it affects each and every person who will ever hear this broadcast, okay?
The Nazis had great business ties with America. I mean, the Luftwaffe, the Air Force, couldn't get off the ground without U.S. Standard Oil patented technologies. Coca-Cola was banned from trading with them under the Trading with the Enemy Act, so they created Fanta, the Nazi drink. And IBM sold them all the punch card systems so that they could orderly, easily catalog and chronicle all the slave Jews that they had.
That's right. And that device was known as the Hollow Earth Machine. It was solicited to the Nazis, and it did exponentially increase the rate in which they could catalog, identify, and thus decimate the Jews to the tune of over 6 million people who basically sat there and waited for a knock on their door, okay? And that current type of technology and agenda has been refined to the present day. And, you know, there's a subsidiary of IBM known as Verichip, which already has FDA approval and one of the commercials is actually for release in Australia down there in the land down under, in which, you know, there's a guy running through a store and the music's blaring, and it looks like he's shoplifting stuff. That's the impression that they're trying to give you, because he's just running through the store, grabbing stuff, putting in his coat, concealing it, and he just runs through the checkout line. The music stops. There's a security guard there who had been watching him throughout the entire, you know, the video, and everything stops, and the security guard goes, "Hey, you know, did you forget something?" And he just simply hands him a receipt, and that's because there's a chip in him which is coupled with the system known as the World Wide Web. And let me try to put this stuff into context for you, okay? In Revelation chapter 13, there's what we call the mark of the beast. And no man shall buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast. With he who has wisdom, calculate the number of the beast. It's the number of a man. This number is 666. Okay? Every time we swipe a card at the store today, okay, it's ultimately validated by one network, which was created by DARPA. That's the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, in which I've had dealings with basically my entire life. Okay? And that system is the World Wide Web. Okay? The word mark in Greek, in which what these scriptures were written in, means two things. It means to etch or prick into the skin, and a badge of servitude, okay? And picture this little chip. They're going to couple it with this system known as the World Wide Web. Let me tell you what the sixth letter of the Hebrew alphabet is, okay? It's Vav, or W in English. which therefore means that WWW has a numeric value of 666. No man shall buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast, which will be coupled with this, you know, the chip will be coupled with this system, the one-world system, in which in the future, the sole conduit for the transmission of this system will be what is called fiber optics, okay? And fiber optic technology, if you do the research, and certainly people like Whitley Strieber and lots of people out there would agree that fiber optic technology came from a particular species of gray alien. Okay, we grew by leaps and bounds with this technology. And again, you know, I have a tendency to upload, you know, sensitive documents from DARPA and other military, you know, websites and official, you know, university websites to my Facebook page. Well over 1,000 of them have been uploaded to my page to the present day. And one of the things that anybody can go look up, you know, type in DARPA and CAPS, that's D-A-R-P-A, in a Google search engine, and then put fiber optics and then put a dot mil after it and see what you get. Maybe type in an AT&T or any telecom company in there, and you'll find that that really will be the sole conduit for all transmissions in the future, which will be coupled with the chip that they're going to try to put into you, okay? And the reason that that's relevant, okay, is because in Revelation chapter 15, there's the seven angels with the seven deadly plagues, and then there's the group of people that have victory over the name, the number, and the image of the beast, and they stand atop a sea of glass mingled with fire, okay? And my personal perspective is that's exactly what we're doing here today, because the sea of glass mingled with fire, in which those victory, the group of, that has victory over these things is standing atop on, is fiber optics. A fiber optic cable is basically a glass tube with a laser that goes through it at the speed of light, in which it glows like it's on fire, okay? That, and how John of Patmos would have tried to make that relevant and put things into context, given what he knew all those years ago, and to try to convey that message into the present, is illustrated in Revelation chapter 15. And how that was known is fascinating, okay? And so the worshiping the image of the beast is, you know, having the creative ability that you possess seeded with negativity in order to manifest materialism, narcissism, the negative aspects of greed, lust, and all the deadly sins that are out there. And that's how we worship the image of the beast, is using our creative ability to manifest things into this reality, as our abilities in that area are heightened in this current and present age in which we're in. You know, we've just reached an extremity of what's known as the Great Year amongst astronomers, which is the cycle that the Earth's axis is shifting 1 degree every 72 years, and it changes our relative viewpoints to the heavens. And this was known by the ancients as far back as Egypt, which is also illustrated in the Old Testament, in that, you know, Moses was privy to this knowledge because he grew up in a pharaonic priesthood in the, you know, in Egypt, as the story of Moses goes, and he wrote the word Ram, which is the age in which those books that he wrote was written. He wrote those books in the age of the Ram. He put the word shofar in the Old Testament 72 times, as anybody who would be able to decipher that later on, given this knowledge, would be able to ascertain. And we're just now being able to understand the processional cycle in and of itself. It's a cycle of time which takes 25,920 years, okay? And you know, we just reached one extremity of that cycle on the shortest day of last year. It's got the planets out of whack. It's, you know, and it's my contention that the, you know, Herculanus and the Bureau or Planet X, whatever you call it, the cycle of these extra planets, you know, the planets that are out of our solar system that come in on a recurring cycle are actually the catalyst that creates this perceptional cycle in and of itself. Mathematically, it all lines up there. As it comes in, it makes our planet basically wobble back and forth. There's a few other variables there with gravity and everything. But, you know, the most important thing that I would really try to say for any human being to understand is to understand what happens when you're dreaming. And we'll pick up there. It's very important.
All right. Well, when we come back from break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll talk about what happens when you're dreaming, I guess. So hopefully you won't fall asleep during the ad break. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment here with Eugene Irvin, and he wants to tell you a little bit about something that happens while you dream. Eugene, take it away.
Thank you. You know, what's happening when you're dreaming can be thought of as, you know, your soul in another dimension. Any of us that have ever had a really lucid dream, I mean, what is that? Scientifically, that is when your pineal gland is active and in full use, or at least in a heightened state of use. And, you know, this is something that's been understood by the ancients all the way to the present day, and something that's heavily controlled today. You know, the Western diet in particular, fried food, refined sugar, bleached stuff, all this kind of things, really has a tendency to calcify the pineal gland. Fluoride also does that, obviously, and it inhibits the function of the pineal gland. And it's hard to wrap your mind around the fact that you have what could be, you know, thought of as an interdimensional access point in your body. I can assure you that you do. And, you know, this is something that allows you to traverse through time and basically, you know, when you close your eyes, an electromagnetic field is generated around the pineal gland, and the darker the better, okay? And what this does is it makes you unaware of the reference point that you're in space-time, and allows a loving energy to be able to come into it and then be facilitated out of it through the eyes. The pineal gland is, for all practical purposes, an eye without the retina. The cellular structure is basically identical, and for all practical purposes can be thought of as a projector in your head that comes out through your eyes. You know, the work of David Wilcock is fascinating in this area, and I like to reference it because he's done such a good job here. Going back through the historical references of what the pineal gland has been represented, you know, the pineal gland is called such because it looks like a pine cone. It's one of the smallest glands in your body. However, it has more blood flow per cubic volume than any other gland in the body, okay? And it contains a substance known as dimethyltryptamine, which is piezochromatic, and it's the most potent hallucinogen on Earth. And piezochromatism is fascinating in and of itself in that, you know, it has the ability to create things through light, okay? And so when you close your eyes and this pineal gland is rearing up and becoming active, that loving energy comes into it, and then you facilitate it out of that. The scriptural evidence for this is found in the Old Testament, and this is my work here. I've never heard this, you know, I've never seen anybody really make this connection to this, and I think that the only reason that's noteworthy is because it's clear, you know, it's proof that this was known of in ancient times, and that's in, Psalms 27, if I'm not mistaken, says, lift up ye heads, O ye glorious gates, to the everlasting doors, and the King of Glory shall come in. Okay? And, you know, you can hear that song by Gregorian monks, and a song by Enigma, actually, called Sadness, which I've just put up on my Facebook page. I invite anybody to join me there, regardless of when you hear this broadcast. My name is Eugene Sonny Irvin, and I'll welcome you there. You know, we have a website that's currently under development and a new radio show that's coming out, which will be called a Call to Action, and there'll be a place to donate there and all this other stuff to get this kind of work done. And any contribution comes with a lifetime guarantee that will help somebody else out when they need it, and that includes yourself. But with the pioneer, look, David Wilcock's work would say that, you know, he calls it the source field, which is basically the source of all, you know, organic matter, inanimate matter, basically everything. And it's a loving energy that encompasses all things. And in Matthew 6:22, Jesus says, if thine eye be single, then thy whole body be full of light. It says that the eye, singular, is the lamp of the body. And if thine eye be single, then thy whole body be full of light. And this is a manifestive gland in the body, which we are not utilizing to even a fraction of the full potential in which we were meant to. And it is your access point to the many mansions in the Father's house in which Jesus is basically, you know, referencing in that scripture. Okay, so there is an innumerable amount of potentialities going on around us, and we have the ability individually and through the process of entanglement of consciousness to collectively resonate into these different houses and thus, you know, live out the potentiality in which we have entered into. And so it's so important to stay positive and to resonate that higher frequency, and that's what we're dealing with here. When we're dreaming, we are in another place that is tangible to us. If we've ever had a lucid dream, we know maybe we're flying. We're able to pick and choose what we're doing. You know, we can do that in a conscious waking state to a much higher degree than what we're doing it. We're doing it from a subconscious perspective today, and the reason that I say it's the most important thing for us to realize is because that's where these entities attack us and control us from on the most fundamental, basic level of our waking reality every day. And so if we can step back and get into a pot, you know, and you need to be able to understand where your protection comes from here and understand that, you know, I'm not ashamed of the name of Jesus Christ. Let me tell you something. From somebody who's executed a black op that has literally saved millions of lives in his life, take it or leave it. You know, I've got videographic proof of it, you know, and if you don't believe it, I'm sorry for that. And if it sounds outlandish, I'll apologize to you. Take it from somebody who has done those things, that the only thing that has ever saved me through that has been to pray. And what does the name of Jesus Christ mean? It means love to me, and it's a higher vibratory frequency in which we can resonate with an open heart. And how do we, you know, see a fulfillment of heaven on earth is to embrace, you know, I'm sorry for an orthodox, you know, mindset out there that might think this is blasphemous. There is clearly a feminine aspect to scripture or any other type of teaching out there that's mainstream. The feminine aspect of this stuff is very important, and it's we all possess masculine and feminine energies within ourselves and in our soul. And excuse me, my Father in heaven, whose image I'm created in, doesn't want a wife. You know, I'm created with fellowship with God, for God, and my highest aspiration in life is to have a loving woman and a family to which I can glorify God. Excuse me, God's going to want that too, and I believe that, and I just say that I know it as a truth. And so to be able to embrace that idea is not a blasphemous thing for me to say here today, and in fact, it's completely underrated and needs to be, you know, understood to a higher degree, and there's clearly been a suppression of that. And, I think that Laura Magdalene Eisenhower has been tried and true in this whole ordeal, and I'd like to go on public record and say that, though she hasn't endorsed my research publicly, she hasn't, you know, gone on record as being involved in any of this, and I don't want to overstep my boundaries here. She is the only one left out of these guys that hasn't clearly tried to withhold information as far as this exopolitical university, Alfred Lambermont Weber, plays a role in this. He has clearly attempted to hold up information that should be disseminated to the public about stuff on Mars, quantum access technologies, mind control, etc. He's made personal attacks on my character. And you know what? All I can say is God bless you, man, and wake up. I don't know if you're under mind control or whatever. But, you know, if I'm MKUltra and I'm out here and I'm, you know, being mind controlled, why in the hell am I trying to get these devices known to cause health hazards off school property? Why, you know, it doesn't make any sense. And so, you can see it, on my Facebook page. You know, I sent the coordinates. Andy wouldn't respond to the fact that I wanted to get these coordinates, these lakes of liquid water out on Mars. And I tell Andrew or Alfred about this in the message, in which you can see the picture of it that I took with a screenshot off my phone, in which he thanks me and sends me a little winking smiling face like, oh, yeah, Governor, I'm thanking you for trying to release these coordinates to lakes of liquid water on Mars and inserting them without the permission of my,
number one partner, Andrew Bishago. He thanks me for doing that and then tries to cover up the fact that he did it and hasn't done a thing or lifted a finger to release this information when he's the founder of ExoPolitics. He's one of the founders of the very discipline itself. That is an outrage. The fact that, you know, this information was clearly attempted to be withheld from the public in regards to the interview that was on late nights in the middle of it is an outrage. The public has a right to know about this stuff, and any time that the, you know, a figure of the prominence and the distinguished character that these guys portray themselves to be makes a clear attempt to withhold information from the public, somebody has to stand up and say something about it. And it's not a personal attack. It's just a simple truth of the matter. And so I'm very happy and pleased to be able to say that today, and I would encourage anybody to do their own research. I have videographic proof and proof in text of the fact that this has actually occurred. The host, Michael Vera, would vouch for the fact that it's occurred as far as the, you know, the attempting to get the interview removed. And, you know, when you're in the truth movement and you're leading a, quote, truth campaign, you have no business doing anything like that, okay? And so the whole world needs to be made aware about that, and these guys need to be held accountable for that kind of stuff, and I make no apologies to it for it. And so I appreciate the platform in which to be able to do that today. And, you know, if there's any questions out there from anybody, you know, I guess we're not going to take any calls. Please hit me up. The website that we have is currently under development. There's a couple of different ones out there. You know, hit me up on my Facebook page. Check out the archives of the show. Whatever you have to do, I will be here regardless of time or circumstance. For anybody who would like to be able to help further the agenda of basically raising awareness about this set of issues, and you're listening to a man who released free energy and a propulsion system on his Facebook page for free. It doesn't even have a computer or a webcam to go and get on video sketch to do this freaking broadcast. And so, you know, if you guys want to help, we're not ashamed to ask for it. And it does come with that lifetime guarantee that we will help somebody else, and that includes yourself. So thank you very much.
Gene, and also I wanted to mention there about, you know, the name of Jesus and so on and so forth. Did you know that if you bless food or say nice things to water, it actually changes the structure of it to really beautiful geometric patterns?
Oh, thank you, the Emoto really experiments. That's right. We have the ability to change things with our thought, our focus, our belief, and our intent. It's the fundamental element of our waking existence. And it all ultimately is an alchemical process of transmutation in which we are all capable of doing, and we all need to understand and release any negative connotation in which we have attached to that fact due to an indoctrinated bias that we have accumulated through basically a bunch of Luciferian freaks trying to push it upon us.
See you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening.